Like that?
And then pull the little bits.
Oh, no.
But just try to just pull the bits, not any bits behind
it. Do you know how hard that is to do, Sophie?
Just, why don't you just put it over your, like, I literally just put them on my head like this.
That's what they are. Like, they are on my head like this.
No,
you're literally doing it. You're showing what I'm doing.
No, you're tucking it. You're tucking it under your hair. You're going. Just put
what
them
do
on
you
your
mean?
Hair. Just put them over your hair
I
like
see.
This.
Oh my God. Groundbreaking.
Before we get into the episode, I want to remind any growing entrepreneurs that the House Mastermind is currently in early bird until the end of January. So if you have a desire to start, build, or scale your business to 10 to 30K months, this year-long mastermind is designed to help you do exactly that. We're going to link all of the information below in the description, so make sure that you go and check it out before early bird expires. Let's get into the episode.
Hello and welcome back to the Hayley Lloyd Show. I'm so excited that you're here and I have a very juicy interview for you guys today that is going to absolutely blow your minds. I have an absolute guitar legend that is coming on the show. She is a world famous guitarist. She is Machine Gun Kelly's guitarist that is in the band and touring around the world with him. She has met some of the biggest stars in the entire world. She's collaborated with incredible human beings like Lizzie Hale, and some absolute rock sensations from all over the world. And she also just so happens to be my younger sister. We have previously done a podcast episode about a year and a half ago. So if you haven't listened to that one, I would recommend going and listening to that one as well, because we go into some very different topics. Like we go into a lot of how she first started her career and how she knew that the initial blow up was going to happen around her audience expanding. And here we're really going into her transition from being a online sensation that really grew on YouTube to actually joining a band. And not just any band, a band that literally tours the entire world and is world famous. Machine Gun Kelly is a huge pop star that pretty much everyone knows and has a very public life that the entire world knows about and follows and is in the media all the time. And there have been certain instances where Sophie has been collateral damage in a couple of media stories online. And today we go into all of it. We go into her journey to joining the band. We go into the difficulties of being a woman in a male-dominated industry. We go into some of the media sensationalized stories that Sophie has unfortunately had to endure as she has been in this space. And it is a brilliant interview, one that we go very deep, we get very honest. And if you have a desire to build a big audience, if you have a desire to be more authentic and creative online in your expression, this is going to be an episode for you. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Welcome officially back to the Hayley Lloyd Show. I'm so excited that we are here with another episode and another interview with none other than the guitarist sensation that is blowing up and has already blown up on social media. She has almost a million followers on Instagram. She has almost a million, no, you have a million subscribers on YouTube. And she is the guitarist as well for Machine Gun Kelly. And she just also so happens to be my sister. So I'm going to start off by asking you a very simple question, which is very large as well. Who yes. is Sophie Lloyd?
Oh my God. First and foremost, a cat mum to my two cats. But mainly, I don't know. It depends. Like what I do, I'm a guitarist. As you said, I play for MGK. I write my own music. Like I'm quite like creative in that way. I just like creating things and just sort of connecting with people through music and art.
Yeah. And that has been something that you've done since you were so young. And if anyone hasn't listened to the first podcast episode that me and Sophie did, I would recommend going and watching that. We'll link it in the description below. But we spoke at length about, you know, Sophie's upbringing, Sophie's childhood, which was our childhood, and really coming into where you are today. So there's a whole other episode on that. But maybe if we could just touch on that a little bit, you know, one of the things that you have recently had out is a new album called Imposter Syndrome, which kind of formed through, you know, your experience of growing up in, you know, the white picket fence town, Henley-on-Thames, and being someone that really stood out in a community of people that really didn't understand what it was that you were doing. And I'm really curious to know, like, from when we last recorded that episode, like a year and a half or so ago, how have things changed for you since then?
Things have changed like crazy. Like everything's kind of blown up within the past couple of years. Like, as you said, I had a quite like unconventional start to music, I guess, which I guess is now becoming more conventional. But, you know, I started online before the internet was really a big thing, on YouTube and stuff. So I think having that kind of barrier there, because I wasn't out like playing gigs with people. We were from a small town, so like there wasn't much of a music scene there. So I didn't have the opportunity to go and like jam with people that a lot of musicians do. And none of our family was musical at all. We tried to form a band once, and Ali and AJ, do you remember? We tried to do Ali and AJ. Potential breakup song we tried to play, and
it didn't work out.
Yeah, needless to say, we didn't last the afternoon. But but
it was tragic. I was so excited about that.
I know, so was I. I remember it very clearly. I still listen to that song and I just get like borderline PTSD. I'm like,
yeah. Those were the days. Probably ended up in a blazing row with one of us being punched.
Sounds about right. Yeah. What could have been, though? We could have been the future.
Yeah, but I will just say, Sophie once, when she was very young, actually bit my butt when she was very young. And this just really goes into the level of violence that Sophie has.
I stand by that decision. I think it was wise. I think you probably did something to piss me off. And yeah, I was just looking out the window. I would do it again.
We should really have a chat about that off camera.
I would do the other cheek.
Oh, wow. Make balance them out. Yes. Thank you.
Anyway.
Anywho.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, so because of that, I you know, started uploading things onto YouTube and Facebook and stuff. And it was never to become a content creator. That wasn't really a thing back then, but it makes me sound old. But like I started, you know, doing it that way. And because of that, I'd always had this barrier where no one was really seeing me play live. Everyone was seeing me play edited, what I chose to show people, if you know what I mean. Like, so that kind of, through that, I kind of developed this sense of like imposter syndrome and anxiety that people expected me to reach this bar that was unattainable, really. So I think that was definitely something that played on my mind a lot. And the kind of realization that like, oh God, I'm becoming a professional musician, I'm going to have to play live, was a very scary, daunting thing for me. And then COVID happened. So I, you know, in a way it sounds bad, but I was kind of relieved because I think we had one gig before COVID. It didn't go that great. And so when COVID hit and I like got to just stop doing gigs, I was like, oh my God, thank God. Which is, you know, I guess kind of sad. But I think through that, during COVID and stuff, I kind of realized like, right, I need to sort this out. Like I need, like, if I want this to be my career, I need to get more comfortable with playing live and stuff. Like it's always been my dream to tour and to, you know, play gigs and stuff. So I've got to figure that out. So that's when I started just being a little bit more real online. Like I made a video about performance anxiety and imposter syndrome and sort of started showing myself online rather than just my shreds. I started just talking to camera a lot more so people could get to know me and realize I was a human, not just some guitar wielding robot. You know,
you are a robot though. What are you talking about? Aren't there Sophie Lloyd conspiracies?
Oh,
Sophie
actually died
and is now a robot.
Yes, that was what the Lost, our music video for Lost was based on, actually, was being called car wielding robots.
But really?
Yeah, it was sort of based on that concept. But what was I saying? So
we're talking about the change, the shift in imposter syndrome.
Yeah, so I started talking a lot more online, being more myself. And then I started Twitch, which was a massive game changer for me because then I got to play live and make mistakes and stuff and everything. And it was live, but still with the safety of there's no one actually in front of me. It's still a screen. So it was like a nice balance for me. And like to this day, like I rarely do like performance streams. Often I'll do like things where I'm learning or I'm writing. So people really hear me mess up. People hear me like play a lot of wrong notes, which I think they kind of like in a way because, you know, they get to see the process of everything and see the the realness that goes on behind it. So I think Twitch is a really valuable tool for musicians in that way. And then, you know, I started working through that. And then I got to a place where I was feeling pretty confident. I started doing some auditions for some bits and bobs. And then, you know, Machine Gun Kelly messaged me on Instagram and I got that.
Wait. Let's actually go into this a little bit more, because this is something like the weird synchronicities of this is like a little bit odd.
Yeah.
So if you could actually just go back to like right to the start of this story, because there was a couple of questions that came through around how did you actually get to working with Machine Gun Kelly? And so I think there's quite a big, there's a story here that's really interesting that, you know, plays into the universe quite a lot and like manifestation. And I think that this was something you and him both manifested. So could you actually like in detail tell that story?
Yeah. So basically we were looking for artists on the album and I had this like pop punk song, which I really wanted. And I was thinking about pop punk people who are like on the radio. And at that moment, I Think I'm Okay by MGK and Youngblood was on the radio a lot. It was just something I'd heard a lot. And I was a big Youngblood fan. So I was just messaging people. But in my mind, I was like, oh, MGK is way too big to ever want to be on a song, to ever collaborate. So I'll just message him like just like slink little just to dip my toe in the water. So I just I just messaged him on Instagram just saying like, if you ever need a guitarist, hit me up, little rocker hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, not thinking he'd ever really see it, but just sort of.
And he didn't for a year.
Yeah. So
ghosted for an exactly. For a year.
Exactly. So, yeah, for a year, he didn't respond at all. And then suddenly, out of the blue, I just got this message on moving day, just as we were about to, on the day we were moving house to out of London to have a quieter life. So we could get a
That's
dog.
So funny.
Yeah, I know, yeah. We could get a dog.
Settle down,
just as we were, you know, ready to sort of become adults. Was when I got the DM from him just being like, how serendipitous, he said. Big word.
Well done. You did it. You said it right.
I've been practicing.
Yeah,
he was like, how serendipitous. I'm looking for a guitarist for tour. Are you based in LA? And I was just like, I'm in London, but I'm willing to travel. Like, I was like, I'm in LA all the time. Never gone to LA once. But, I was like, yeah, I'm just my second home.
Yeah. I just got back from there.
Yeah. And he, you know, we just sort of started chatting and we had a like Zoom call with him and the band and stuff. We were just talking and I didn't even really have like an audition. I just sent a bunch of stuff I had from, you know, gigs over the time. Luckily I'd been in a band before called Marisa and the Moths, where I, you know, sort of was developing my stage presence a bit and getting a bit more confident with stuff. And that, so I used a lot of footage from that, as well as obviously he'd seen all my YouTube channel and all of those bits and bobs. And I'd actually done a Shred cover of I Think I'm Okay too over on TikTok, so I sent him that. And that was just kind of it. And then before you know it, like, we had to get a visa, so it all happened quite quickly. So we had 3 weeks or something between when everything was confirmed and me flying out to LA, and in that time I had to get a visa, which is like pretty much physically impossible.
So hard. Yeah. And I think it's also important to note that Coulson really went through quite like an ordeal to get you specifically, and I think that happened because he's quite spiritual. You know, he believes in like the universe, he believes in manifestation. He does believe in serendipity. And so I think if it wasn't for that, of you messaging a year before, he probably wouldn't have gone through all of that fuss to sort of get that visa, because the visa had to happen really fast and you're on, you know, like the alien visa or something.
Yeah.
Which is like God's presence. Like the only other person that's got this is like the president.
Yeah, we had this thing where I was granted, like, I can't remember what it was called, but it was like where someone would meet me at the border and walk me through, that's only like available for like diplomats and stuff like that. And I would just be there with my little guitar, like, hang on.
Oh my God, makes me so happy. That was cool.
But yeah, we managed to get a visa literally the morning of our flight to LA to fly out there was when I got my passport. So like I was there, my flight was at like 1 p.m. and I was outside there at like 10. I was outside there at like 10 a.m. like knocking on the door of the embassy, like, give me my passport back. Because I didn't even know if they'd have it, because they were like, it takes a few days for us to process. But luckily, thank God they did, and then got the train to
Heathrow. It was a stressful time.
Oh my God, it was so stressful. It was,
and
it was
this horrendous. Was actually over the time that I was meant to be coming back to the UK, and we had like planned to do all of this, you know, looking at this big house to rent in our hometown, and like having a big family time, and then literally as that was happening, you got this news, and I was coming back from Australia, and you were like, "I have 24 hours to see you," and I was like, "What?"
Yeah, I know.
So I literally just like sat in your room when I got there, and I just was like close to you, and we barely spoke because you were just like headphones on.
Yeah, I think it was cute because I think we did a live stream or something. I think we streamed on Twitch. A lot of people like remember that. I forgot that, and someone mentioned it the other day, and I was like, oh my God, yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, so it must have been about like 72 hours that we had a crossover, and I came over to yours, and we had pizza, and we did a live stream Twitch, and it was so fun, and I was so awkward, and you tried to teach me to play guitar, and it was disastrous.
Yeah, you weren't the best.
Yeah, it wasn't good. No. It wasn't good.
Ali and AJ wouldn't be proud.
Yeah, yeah. My second failed attempt in the music world. Neither of them official. Yeah, okay, cool. And so I think this is interesting because now, you know, you're going to perform with MGK. And I want to come back to like the imposter syndrome because I remember us having conversations, and I think we actually had a coaching call once. When, if you remember, you were going to be doing like a Netflix series or something that was like following you, and there was like a pilot season that was being produced. And part of it was basically the journey of like overcoming imposter syndrome. And I remember one of the things that you did, you were like, you know, I'm willing to hire a coach, I'm willing to get a therapist, like, what do I need to do? And I think it may have even been on the, like when you'd had the conversations with MGK, like on the run up to that. We were like, okay, let's have a coaching call. Let's see what's underneath of it. And then it was literally like we had one session and then you went. And so I'm really curious to know, like, when we spoke, it was really alive. You know, it was a feeling of like, am I going to be able to do this? What if I fuck up? You know, and I'm really curious if you could just describe the anxiety, having only ever previously played in small pubs in Reading, Purple Turtle, you know, and things like that, small band venues, to then the idea of going and performing worldwide on stages in front of hundreds of thousands of people. Can you explain, first of all, like what that actually felt like for you before you got on that plane?
I think it was funny because I think I hadn't really thought about the shows, if you know what I mean. I sort of almost tried to put that to the back of my mind. I was doing very much like one day at a time, one step at a time. This is my task for today. That's my task for tomorrow. Rather than like getting, because I think I just get overwhelmed if I thought about it all. And there were definitely times where I did get overwhelmed. But I think at the few, like, because it was such a short amount of time, I was just concentrating on preparing as much as possible. So I went out and got an iPad and basically just like wrote notes and worked out every part of every song. And, you know, just really, really tried to be as prepared as possible. So when I go into rehearsals, whatever they throw at me, if they'd name a song, I would know, or at least I'd have notes that I could refer to. Because there's a lot of songs, like a lot of the songs are quite short and they're quite simple, but there's a lot of like, they're all quite similar. Like it's just a lot to like cram into your brain for anyone, especially because I'd never kind of done it before. I'd never had to do that kind of thing. So yeah, it was just, I think for me as well, just the anxiety of being in a different country where I didn't know anyone. Like Chris, my partner, came with me for the first week, which was very helpful to have that like emotional support there for that first week. And I think in the first rehearsal, everything was like pretty good. I did have a bit of a wobble in the first rehearsal where like I went outside the rehearsal room and like, again, thank God Chris was there to comfort me because I was having like a little bit of a panic attack. So I was just like that I wasn't getting, and like everything I'd learned, they love to like change the structures of stuff and change the keys and all of this stuff. So there was a lot of quick changes that I had to kind of wrap my head around. And at first it was a little bit overwhelming. But you know, then I got through that day and then got through the next and got through the next. And
if we could just quickly pause on that for a second, I'm curious if you can kind of cast your mind back to those moments. What were some of the thoughts that were coming up in your mind that were creating the anxiety?
I think it was just thinking that I couldn't keep up with the changes. Like you're suddenly in a room with all of these people who have, you know, they're, you know, legends in the music industry. They have this massive career. And it is that like typical imposter syndrome where you're like, I don't belong in this room. You know, you're like, they are so successful that have done so much. And I'm just this little kid from Henley. And now I have to be at this, they're all expecting me to be at this level. They're expecting me to be like this. Cause the other guitarist is a seasoned guitar. Like he's been on tours for like the past like 10, 20 years or so with, you know,
it's Justin.
Yeah, that's Justin Lyons. He's an incredible guitarist. He's been on tour with like Jay-Z, Blackpink, like, you know, everyone pretty much. So he was a massive, massive help with, you know, if I had any questions, he was someone I felt very safe going up to and comfortable. And he would help me, you know, quickly learn things. And he'd also big me up as well. You know, he's very encouraging and that really helped. Yeah, I think it was just trying to get over that initial thing of like, oh my god, these, and they're all like dudes, very tall men, like they're all giants.
They are so tall.
I know,
it is bizarre.
Yeah, they're all massive. So I was like, both
intimidating.
So exactly, it was intimidating, and I think, you know, they're all very, you know, big, loud American dudes. You know, it's sort of, it's very different to what I'm used to being around. Like they're all brought up from like a gangster background, you know, in Ohio, and I'm from like Henley on Thames, you know, it's a very different type of environment. So I think I had to kind of get used to that and figure out where I fit in that environment. And that was
where have you now found that you fit in that group?
Yeah definitely, like now they're like my
how
brothers.
Do you fit?
I think it's I'm just like the little British one.
And you're able British to one. Own it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's nice. Like it's, I think they like having that feminine energy around. Like, I think it's sort of, it's cool because they were such an established band. It's nice that I was able to come in and offer something different musically and just like energy wise within the bands. I think it kind of softened them up a little bit. And like, yeah, just sort of, it felt right. Like it felt really complete.
Yeah. And I guess that's another angle that I want to take this down, and a nice segue is like, you did come into this band as a female guitarist, you know, going on tour with men. Mm-hmm. And some of the questions that we had coming through were like from women specifically asking about what it was like for a woman to come into a male dominated tour environment and be able to find your own, be able to be on a tour bus and deal with, you know, feminine things like getting your period and things that, you know, men don't really understand or have to deal with. And I'm curious if you could talk into that a little bit and what that was like for you.
Sorry, I keep punching the mic.
It's so classic.
Oh, yes.
Me and Sophie are like the two most clumsy humans you can find. So one of us will punch a mic.
Yeah, that's my place in the band too, is the clumsy one, the one that falls over. Yeah.
The one that's got loads of bruises.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah, it's crazy. I think that was definitely like an adjustment for me. Like it was nice because like the first tour we were in, our bus was a lot smaller, so I wasn't with the big group of guys on our first tour. I was with Cole, Megan was there for like a few of the shows, Alyssa, who's like the wardrobe and styling assistant, and like Justin as well. So it was a very like chill bus. So it wasn't, you know, because Colton himself, he has quite like he has some feminine energy to him as well. You know, like he's a masculine dude, but he's still like, he's really receptive to female energy, which is really nice. And he's very like open about, you know, you can talk to him about anything if you're having a period or whatever, you know, you can just say that to him and he'll be like, oh yeah, sure, can I get you anything? You know, he's very good with, cool. Yeah, he's very good with that sort of stuff. So that bus was like a really nice kind of, just like good vibes. It was nice having Alyssa there, another girl as well to support you. Like that's been really beneficial for me, having another. It's really made me kind of appreciate my female friends and my female friendships in my life, you know. That was really nice support. So that wasn't too bad, I think. But when it got crazy was this tour that we went on this year was when I switched to like the main band bus. So I was with, I think there must have been like 12, 13 of us. And I was the only girl. And again, these are all like big boys, you know?
Burly guys.
Exactly, big guys, the security guards, you know, the chef was on there, that, you know, it's all like the team and the managers and everything are on there too. And it's really fun, like, but obviously it gets a little bit overwhelming at times. It's nice because you have your bunk, which is like, you can draw the curtain and it's very private. And they're a good team because they're very protective over you. Like, they would always, you know, there'd always be like someone that would, you know, sort of make sure I was all right before bed and, you know, wake me up in the morning, and you have your privacy with the curtain. So it's a bit annoying, you know, having to get changed in your bunk. But, you know, if you needed some space, like, I could just say to them, like, do you mind if I get changed in here? And they'll be like, oh yeah, no problem.
Got you. So and was there any situations where you did have to like explain certain things or establish boundaries that people didn't understand?
No, I think they made an extra effort to kind of be as, because I think they knew it was probably more difficult for me than it was for them. So I think they made an extra conscious effort to kind of be extra nice.
which was
really, really relieving. And like, you're not on that a lot of the time. When you're on the bus, it's more you're just kind of sleeping, you know, and there's a private bathroom, which is the grossest part, because on, as you can imagine, if you're on a bus with 12 dudes,
and that's gonna get destroyed.
Exactly, it is wet. I have mastered the squat. My butt did not touch that seat once. I know, and as long as you always have shoes on as well. You don't want to be going in there in your socks, you know? So
that you sort is of haggard.
You get used to these little tips, you know, that you need to know.
Oh yeah.
Bring a pair of
next time I'm on a huge tour bus with guys.
Yes. It's a common problem.
Sure. Yeah.
But you know, it's little stuff like that. And you know, when you're on your period, they have like a bin and stuff. So it's not as annoying as you might think. I guess I was lucky because I was sort of touring at a level where it is okay. There's a lot of people that go on like van tours and stuff, and I can imagine that's much more difficult. But you know, we were lucky. We had a little bit of, you know, if I needed privacy, it wasn't too bad. And you're usually on there overnight, and then when you wake up, you're at the venue or you're at the hotel. So and then you just go to your own room. So it's not too bad. I quite enjoyed it, and like I said, it makes a difference having a group of people around you that are cool and, like, you know, respect you as a woman and stuff, and let you do your thing, you know.
And speaking of that, what has your experience been in the music industry in general? I think you've got very fortunate with MGK that they are so respectful of women. They really see you as an equal. There's no like hierarchy there, which is really cool, that I have seen anyway. But what has your experience been in like the media industry and in the general media as well, being a woman in the guitar space, where there's not that many female guitarists that are really well known? You know, you're probably one of a few, like a handful of people that are really successful female guitarists or female musicians that aren't singers. Yeah. What's your experience been like?
It's been like, it's been good and bad. Like, I will say, like, in a way, like when I was starting, I think it sort of became my unique selling point a little bit, that I was a woman. So I, you know, I'm not going to say it hasn't been beneficial, if you know what I mean, because it has. Yeah. But it's sort of at that point, it's kind of at that point now where I'm starting to like sort of notice things a bit more. And, you know, I think media is, not even just, but like, I guess like the comments on things, like generally the media's all right. Like when they, at least in like the rock music industry, the articles are all quite, you know, positive. You know, we have an interview and they'll write what I said. You know, there's not much like opinionated stuff. It's not like drama gossip columns like you get sometimes, which we can talk about later. But generally in like the music media, it's pretty much they write what you say. But then it's like the comments of those articles, that's where it gets like, it just kind of pisses me off. Like, I never really used to, and I think I've just kind of noticed it more recently, that there's just a lot of misogyny, there's a lot of just trolls, I guess. And it's just one of those things that you kind of have to deal with when you're a public figure, so you know, it's fine.
Yeah,
but it's just something that I've noticed, especially with releasing this album. It's always been, there's just, everyone has something to say on how I dress and how I look and how I do my makeup, and and everything like that. And I think that kind of irritates me. Like, I did a imposter syndrome where I'm not even wearing a particularly sexy outfit or anything. It's the song I did with Lizzie Hale, and someone made a review and just went off about how I was dressed. And I was like, okay, but if, like, Motley Crue, take for example, they have like, you know, girls in little bikinis come on stage, everyone's like, yeah, that's so awesome. Like, they've built a career on you know, sort of sexualizing women, and women that love it and want to be, you know, like that. And I think that's awesome. I think that's cool. It's rock and roll, you know, that's just what it is. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. I've always thought that was awesome. I have so many friends that like work in, you know, work as dancers and stuff. And I think that's awesome. They absolutely love it. And I think it's so fun to see and like to cheer on. But as soon as it's the women that's taking control of that and is kind of mastering that and is monetizing herself doing it in whatever way, that's where everyone has an issue with it. So it's fine if men do it and men are monetizing it and they're doing it, then it's cool, then it's rock and roll. But as soon as the woman wants to monetize it and herself and take that power there, then it's suddenly wrong. And I don't know, it's just like that's just something that's kind of irritated me lately.
Why do you think that is?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's difficult because obviously, I don't know. I'm not a dude, so I don't even want to think about what's going on in dudes' heads. But I think, you know, I think, I don't know. And I think that's the thing that irritates me, is that I really can't wrap my head around it. I don't know whether it's just that kind of internalized systemic kind of misogyny or whether it's, I literally don't know what it is. There's, you know, there's always been this sort of weird thing where, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is like just, it's so deeply ingrained in our society. And it's interesting, I've been having quite a lot of conversations with other people. Bianca Taylor came on my podcast recently and we were talking about this at length as well, where it's like, there just seems to be something ingrained in our society that says that still when a woman comes into a position of power, we can only celebrate them up until a certain point, as long as they're still under the thumb of, you know, the society rules that we have created. As soon as you get a little bit too big, as soon as you start doing something for yourself, because I think, you know, the intention behind, you know, dressing sexy and everything is important, because it's like, you can either be dressing sexy to get something or dressing sexy to express yourself. And from what I know about you, like, you dress the way that you dress, sexy, like free, because it's how you express yourself. It always has been. Like, I remember when I was living in Canary Wharf and what did you think I was going to say?
No, I just thought of the worst story. But
oh my God, I'm excited. Yeah, you'll tell me afterwards. But I remember when I was living in Canary Wharf and I was like straighty 180 at the time. Like, my partner was a banker at the time. And I remember that you came and I came to meet you in like a suit. And you were literally there in like your tiny hot pants, like this tiny little crop top. And I was like trying to like cover you up because we were walking past like all these bankers and everyone was like, whoa. And you were just like, I don't give a fuck. And I was just like, it was interesting because I couldn't handle it at the time, you know, and I've had to do so much work on even my own internalized misogyny that I had around how a woman should dress, how a woman should express. And it's like, that is so deeply ingrained in our society that it can even affect women, like it did for myself as well. Oh, just got to move this closer to my mouth. I'm getting passionate, so I'm like leaning forward and the mic's like back here.
Out of my way.
I'm like, let me hug my sister. yeah, but it's just so funny. Like, you've always been so comfortable in your expression. And I think that's a really difficult thing, is that really threatens a lot of people. You know, it really threatens a lot of people's, like, how we are deemed, that this society is meant to run. It's meant to look a certain way. Women are meant to fit in a certain box. You're meant to become, you know, marriage is really about property. If misters and misses, if you just add an apostrophe in there, it's misters. You know, it's like it actually does end up being about property, which is, you know, what this has kind of like been built on. And I think when we bring that into something like the music industry and even the media as a whole, which has been marginally a majority, sorry, majority like controlled and run by men for the past like few decades. Mm. We are starting to shift that, but the narratives are still like, you know, it's popular for people to reinforce old beliefs by bringing people down. And I think that's what we're seeing like a lot, you know, in lots of spaces where instead of people commenting on your music like they would for a man, they're commenting on your outfit. They're commenting on how you dress. They're commenting on, you know, makeup. And you see, you know, these really beautiful, successful actresses, you know, being interviewed on their performances, and some like super backwards people are just like being like, oh, what are you going to wear for this? And they're just like, would you ask that to this guy here? If not, yeah, next question, you know? And it's like, why does our internalized understanding of what is appropriate questions even and responses for different genders, like, why does it change? And I think it's something we have to shift. But yeah, thank you for sharing on that, because I think it's probably something that a lot of female guitarists and musicians will probably feel, and entrepreneurs as well.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, like you said, I've always just enjoyed that kind of fashion, and I love like looking for different pieces online. I find it really fun. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, do they make you wear the things that you wear? And I'm like, no, usually I choose them. Like, you know, there's sort of we have, again, like the wardrobe stylist Alyssa, who's, you know, another woman who's like, yeah, you look hot, like, yeah, get, you know, she's like, yeah, why not, do it, that looks cool. And I think that's the thing that's cool in the band, is everyone has their own style and everyone can express themselves kind of how they want. There's no dress code or anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, Machine Gun Kelly is like the king of weird outfits. Let's
yeah,
be honest.
Exactly. So, you know, I have to match him, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You got to up that.
Exactly.
Can you quickly tell us what this weird story was that you got to tell?
Oh no, it's really bad. It's not even funny. It's actually really bad. I just remember when we went to our grandpa's funeral. And dad still brings it up because I was wearing like the shortest skirt, and it's all anyone could comment on was how short.
Oh no.
And I was like, that's one time I probably could have dressed a little more conservative.
Yeah, could have lowered the skirt. By the way, I wasn't there because I live in Australia. Yeah. And yeah, like, anyway, let's not dwell on that.
Yeah, that's why I was like,
yeah. Is this awkward? Yeah, it's funny though, isn't it? And I think what's really cool about what you created is it is so authentic. And I wonder whether you could talk to this a little bit, because so many people fear the judgment of other people. You know, judgment of other people. What are people going to think if I wear this? What are people going to think if I dye my hair? What are people going to think if I do a normal quotation mark career like music? And it stops people from doing what they want to do. And so I'm curious, like, how have you navigated like judgments on you that do get put on you, because that's natural, but how have you navigated those periods without it swaying you from your authenticity?
I think because I've obviously been, you know, into rock music, into stuff that was kind of more unconventional, at least where we grew up. From when I was very young, I was sort of into the weird kind of stuff. Like, even before I went into my emo phase, I remember I was wearing these bright blue leopard print jeans. Like, I've always like kind of liked the weirder stuff. I just kind of have. So I think that's the thing I've kind of...
Your Heelys used to be the statement. That's what it was.
Best. Honestly, bring back Heelys. There's nothing better than when you're going for a shopping mall on that smooth floor and you get a good roll. Ooh,
yeah. Someone buy Sophie a new pair of Heelys.
Yes, please. But I think it's something that I've gone through sort of since from a young age. So I think I've learned to kind of build up this kind of thick skin around it. And I think for me, I found a lot of comfort in music growing up. And I think that's why I got so into it, was, you know, listening to these songs and really listening to the lyrics of these songs. And it kind of just, I don't know, comforted me, I think, in that sense that I knew it was kind of all going to be okay, if you know what I mean. Like, you know,
I think like something's really interesting, because I love to understand the psychology of this, is me and you went in very different directions with this. Mm. Like, we were both like bullied when we were young. You were bullied much worse than I was. But I think it made you kind of rebel against it.
Yeah.
And you were like, you went very much like insular and kind of just owned what you were. And it was almost like a rebellion. You were kind of like, fuck you, everyone. Like, I don't give a fuck what any of you think. I'm going to do this anyway. And yeah. I went in the very different way, which I was just like, oh my God, this hurts so much. I want to fit in. And I started trying to contort myself to like make everyone like me and everything. And you went in completely the opposite way. So it took me so much longer to actually find who I was, you know, yeah. up until really the last 3 years have I actually found who I am. You found who you were when you were very young. And do you think that there is like an edge of like rebellion that came up when you were younger that allowed you to sort of step into that authenticity?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think it's funny because I was very like mild mannered. Like I was quite introverted. I was pretty shy. So not in the sense of rebellion in my like behavior, I guess. No. You know, I was always quite like a good kid growing up. But I think, and that's sort of why I think it was extra weird that I kind of wanted to stand out in this way. Well, I don't think I wanted to stand out, but like, you know, that I did wear all these weird clothes and stuff and things. I think, yeah, I think that probably was my way of rebelling against it and kind of being, you know, just kind of, you know, the youth rebellion. I think that was the way I did it rather than all the crazy activities that you did. So
clearly no judgment over here.
Are you a growing entrepreneur looking for an expansive place to support you in growing your business to six or multi-six figures? A place that doesn't just support you with market-relevant strategies for scaling, but also gives you the mindset support to create the identity of someone who owns the six or multi-six figure business? If this is you, the House of Feminine Authority Mastermind is for you. This is a 12-month mastermind that is designed to help you bridge knowledge gaps and step into a new identity where you've expanded your capacity to hold more responsibility, more pressure, discomfort, and change so you can build the business that you are dreaming of running. You will get personalized coaching to support you on your journey and join a community of like-minded humans all on the same journey as you. This is for mission-driven humans wanting to become a feminine authority online and make money in integrity and become known and sold out for the incredible reputation that they've built in their industry. To join the mastermind, follow the link in the description below to read more. And if you have any questions, send me a DM on Instagram at Hayley June Lloyd.
But yeah, like I look back and I'm, you know, there was some, I think I was a little bit depressed growing up as well. And I think, you know, like I said, I just sort of saw comfort in that community. And I think I thought about I was kind of an avid daydreamer, or I always thought about my future, if you know what I mean. I was like, oh, when I get out of school, I'm going to be in a band and I'm going to be in this community. Like I always thought of my community as not where I was. I was like, that's what I'm going to do after school, is I'm going to, wow, you know, go and find my fellow people afterwards, if you know what I mean. I never really thought of like the here and now, which maybe I should have a little bit more. And now I look back and I'm so grateful for my school friends, you know, and stuff, and I appreciate them so much more. But yeah, I was always sort of looking forward, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, if someone was currently, you know, struggling with finding their authentic expression and like releasing the judgment that people have on them, what would your advice be to them?
I think a few things. I'd say if you're still like kind of trying to find who you are authentically, it's like just try a bunch of different stuff, like try going to art classes, try going to music classes, meeting new people in that sense, or like, you know, sports, rock climbing, like anything you want to do, like just try some new things that you've kind of been interested in and see if you can find a group of people around you. And I think it's kind of realizing as well, I've realized as I've got older that everyone is just kind of, you know, faking it till you make it, you know. Everyone's just kind of, you know, trying to get along and live their own life. People are so always thinking about themselves, if you know what I mean. Everyone is the center of their own world. So, you know, no one's really gonna, like, how often do you really sit there and like analyze other people? Usually it's just like a second on your screen and maybe you go like, oh, that's a weird haircut. But then you scroll and you forget about it straight away. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't really make an impact on people's lives in that way. And I think that realization for me was really kind of beneficial and helping me break out and helping me try new things content wise. And just gives me the confidence to kind of be myself, I guess. And and do it in that way. And just, yeah, surrounding yourself with good people who allow you that freedom to kind of try things as well. Don't put you in a box. Like, just being confident and just allowing yourself to try new things and just allowing yourself a bit of grace that also sometimes things don't work out. And sometimes you try something and it doesn't work. and it's okay to be like, do you know what? That wasn't for me. You know, you haven't failed at it. You've just realized that you don't want to do that, you know? And I think that's fine too. And I think that's,
It's interesting because you're kind of talking about a growth mindset here. And I think this is so important, whether you've got a business or whether you are a musician or a creative, is like, we've got to be okay with failure. Like, we've got to be okay with trying things and them not working out, because like business, as you know, like even being a content creator, it's all about trying new things, seeing whether it works and then leaving what doesn't and moving on, you know, with the lessons that you've learned. And, you know, even for me in this business that I have now, there have been so many things that haven't worked. There was a period, you know, when I was starting this business and it was so cringe, you know? And I remember
you saying, like, how do you do stories?
yeah, exactly. And it's so funny because I remember even there was this old friendship group that I had, and they started sharing around my stories, being like, this is so cringe, like blah, blah, blah. And I found out, and it like gutted me. And, you know, even my partner passed judgment on what I was doing, and I ended up blocking him whilst we were living together. Love you, Tom. But like, see, I only unblocked him like 2 months ago, actually. That's hilarious. So but it really does, you know, there is such like I think of just being able to put your blinders on and be like, there's going to be instances where I fail. And if you have like, it often comes from perfectionism, fear of failure, like fear of judgment. Like, you need to look at that stuff, because if you have those fears that hold on, they are going to stop you from being able to find your true expression and find what you want to do and find the business that you want to run. Because you're going to be like, this first time I do it has to be the time to do it. It's got to be the thing that works. And it just doesn't work like that. Like, I remember when you were starting to create all of your videos and everything online, like you weren't like the first few weren't landing. You know, you still were doing it. Like, no one was watching. If anything, you were getting negative comments, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like, you had to keep on showing up and be like, I'm going to try all these different things and see what works.
Exactly. And also, like, I feel like a lot of people are good at like putting off stuff, being like, oh, when I get that microphone, I'll do it then. Or when I get this new camera, that's when I'll do my first bit of content. And it's like, if you look at my first few videos on YouTube, it looks like they were filmed on a potato. They're, you know, they're not. They're also, just like, you know, my playing wasn't the best by any means. Like, the timing was all over the place. Like, I didn't know my techniques. But it was like, just like, you have to start somewhere, and you have to post that first video. You have to do that first thing. You have to take that first step. And that's kind of the scariest part. But then it's kind of nice, because then you can look back on it and you can see how much you've grown. And people always say, I love that you keep those old videos on there, because it shows your progression with different things. And I think that's, you know, really special.
It's part of it.
Exactly. It's nice to see the journey.
Yeah. And it's interesting hearing you talk about the kind of forward thinking that you had when you were in a difficult situation. One of my mentors, Sahara Rose, she talks about turning your pain into your purpose. And I think, you know, what you're talking about here is that you were turning that pain into your purpose. And you're really talking about manifesting here. You know, when you were like, I was thinking about the community that I wanted to create in the future. I was thinking about being in the band that I wanted to be in the future. That's manifesting, you know? And so I think this is such like a, for anyone that doesn't believe in manifesting, my God, we've got to have a chat. But you know, just even if you're in a situation where you're just like right at the beginning of the journey, or you're growing something, or you're pivoting into a different area that does require you to go into the unknown, maybe be a beginner again, it's the visualization of where you want to get to in the future that will keep you going. If you don't have that vision, everything can become a little bit pointless, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I never thought of that kind of pain into purpose thing. Like, I think that is exactly what I was kind of describing unknowingly, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, having the pain of not fitting in, but being like, well, I will in the future, you know. And I kind of thought about that, and I was an avid daydreamer, so I'd always kind of put my headphones on and like close my eyes and just picture that I was performing these songs and stuff. And it's, you know, I think you're right, because now, you know, so many of these people like I've worked with, I've met and now like my colleagues and stuff, the people I used to kind of daydream about meeting and being in a band with and stuff, and I had on my walls. So I think that's true. I think it was, you know, obviously when I was younger, I didn't understand the concept of manifestation. I probably didn't even know what it meant. But I think looking back, that is definitely what I kind of spent my whole life doing, if you know what I mean. That was my whole growing up, was manifesting this kind of future for myself.
Yeah. And speaking of collaborations and, you know, doing your imposter syndrome album that's just come out with incredible artists, Lizzie Hale being one of them, you know, some of these people were people that had been on your vision board for working with since you were very young. And I'm really curious, like from a business perspective, like how did those collaborations come about?
So basically we I know I wanted to do a collaborative album. So me and my managers, we got together, we wrote a list of like the dream artists that we wanted to, you know, kind of work with. And then basically I just sort of started messaging them on Instagram. As I said, I sort of drafted this message just being like, hey, this may be a long shot, but I'm doing an album if you're interested. Like I sent them, you know, links to my pages and stuff, and it was like, if you let me know your email, I can send you more information. And I was surprised by how many kind of replied. I think, you know, it sort of, I guess, showed the reach that social media can have in that way. So yeah, it was really like, Lizzie was my number one artist that I wanted on it. Like, I've been a Hellstorm fan for so long, and she's just always been such like a role model, I think, to everyone, especially women in the music industry, especially in the rock music industry. So I knew that was something I wanted to collaborate with, someone I wanted to collaborate with. And yeah, sort of, you just go emailed back and forth and sent them the songs. They would, you know, send back the kind of demo. If I wanted any changes, I'd let them know, and then they'd send back a final thing, and our producer would mix it in. And it's kind of as simple as that music wise and then it gets complicated with all the labels and stuff get involved.
Yeah, it's so interesting and fascinating that, you know, these things have kind of worked out. And I'm really interested as well in your creative process, because a big part of like authenticity as well is creation. You know, you're essentially, when you're fully authentic, you're able to just create based on what you want. Like, it's so about expression. And so I'm curious, like with the collaboration process, how did that creative process work? How much of it was like you and Chris, and how much of it was like Lizzie Hale, for example?
So it basically, all of the instrumental stuff was me and Chris. So Chris is my partner. He also is my drummer and just general, you know, partner with everything, business partner as well. So we were sort of, I'd come up with some sort of riff, some idea, and Chris would put drums to it, and then I would just sort of go off and write, and we'd have basically at the end of it kind of this glorified backing track, if you know what I mean, glorified vocal backing track. And then I would send that to them. I'd send it to the collaborator and basically just say, I'd explain to them what I knew. I wanted the album to be called Imposter Syndrome. I knew that was the theme. So I'd sent them that and my kind of thoughts about what I kind of wanted the songs to be about. And I let them have as much or, you know, as little input as they wanted. So I was like, you know, if you want to write the whole song, the vocals, and the melody and the lyrics, then you can. If you are like, nah, just send me over a written song, then I could get a songwriter. But everyone chose to write their own, which was really cool. And yeah, they'd send it over, and then like we'd edit like little bits of lyrics. Like sometimes I might want lyrics changed a little bit to fit in with the theme a bit more, to have the more of this running storyline. Sometimes I have ideas for harmonies and stuff. Like, it was fun, like to kind of be able to delve into the musical bit. But they wrote all of like the kind of top line, and then I would listen to it, and I'd kind of be like, right, what can I add here after it? What guitar parts might complement it? So then I went over and I added a bunch more layers then, and sent it back. But yeah, I always enjoy writing. Like, I think I have a different way of writing to a lot of musicians, because I think a lot of musicians are very creative, and I say I'm a creative, but I'm not like, I'm a creative mind, but I'm not actually that creative. Like, I am very logical.
Oh,
like,
expand on this for me.
I'm very logical. Like, I definitely, I know, I can't remember which side is the left and the right side of the brain, but I'm definitely more the maths, science, logical side than I am the creative side. Yeah, which always surprises people because of obviously the career I've chosen. it's all in the creative.
Can you explain that a little bit more to me? Like, because one of the questions I was actually going to ask you was like, what is creativity to you? So I'm curious, maybe you can answer that and then explain how the sort of more logical side is different to that and how the two connect.
So basically when I write, so people will see this like a lot on my Twitch and stuff, is I write kind of bar by bar, rather than like, I feel like a lot of people who have the creative side of the brain are able to like improvise really freely. They kind of really feel it coming out of them. And I think that's so awesome. I think I wish I had that. That's the thing I'm working on a lot more. Oh, sorry. Punching things again.
Another punch. Punch number two. We'll have a tally on the screen.
That's something that I'm working at and I really, really want to get better at. So that's the thing I'm practicing, because I think it's so cool when people can do that. I think that's the epitome of music, really. But I realized early on I don't have that ability. Like, I don't have that kind of rhythm music in me where I can just flow and dance. You know, I'm an awkward little white British girl. I'm like, I have no like mood, I have no feel, you know. I so disagree.
But anyway, I'm going to let you finish and then we'll.
I'm better at faking it as I've got older. But so I think of guitar quite logically. Like, I think very much in shapes and patterns, and I like to have have these repetitive patterns, and I like to play the same thing all the time. Like, you know, it's just sort of kind of how my brain works in that sense. And I've noticed our dad has this as well. Like, the way he was explaining how he codes is very similar to how he paints with, like, he does all these straight line paintings with rulers and masking tape, and how he does his creativity and how he does that. You know, he doesn't just paint with a paintbrush, he has to mark it out and draw it out with a fucking protractor, whatever tool that is. And that's kind of how I create music as well, is I do it bar by bar. It's all quite structured, where it's like, I'm in this scale, okay, now I move to this scale, and I kind of think of it quite like theory based, I guess, in a sense. And it's always quite logical, and I think that's why I like shred, because it's all kind of numbers, and I don't know, it's just it's less free, it's more structured in how I write.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because as you're talking through this, like, all I hear is your expression of creativity is not the same as someone else's. And I think this is why, you know, this conversation about creativity is so interesting, because everyone's expression of creativity is going to be different. And that's why, you know, you do have some very abstract artists who, you know, you go to a gallery and some of them are very structured and straight. Like, some of them are just like a box, you know. Mm. And it's like, that is still creativity. And so I think I would actually say you're a highly creative person, like probably one of the most creative people that I know. The only difference is you do it in your way. You do it in a way that's authentic to you. You aren't trying to be like everyone else and do like the flowy sort of thing. That's your way of creating, just as dad's way is his way of creating. Like, it's still creativity. It's still expression, you know? And I think what I'm hearing you say is like, you have learned to express yourself, and you naturally express yourself in this more logical way.
Yeah.
But what if that still gets to be creativity?
Yeah, that's very true, actually. I think it is. And that's kind of what I've realized now, is I think that the way that I play is kind of what makes me unique as a guitarist, and what gives me my unique sound, if you know what I mean. Like, that's kind of what.
And that's the vibe.
Me. Exactly. And like, you know, like I said, I want to work on the other stuff, because I think it is amazing when people can just crack out this crazy R&B solo. I think that's awesome. But, you know, that's something I actively need to work on. That's not something that's built into me, like a lot of people who grow up in like gospel churches and stuff. It's kind of in their blood, you know. And like I said, we don't have any music in our blood.
No, not at all. But I think it's interesting, because, like, you know, both of us have grown into certain areas. Like, I would say, literally, even just 3.5 years ago, I had severe social anxiety, and I never ever thought that I would be able to do a podcast like this, where I was just speaking off the cuff and asking you questions that came to my head. You know, every single time that I spoke, I would have to have a script, and if I didn't, I'd have a panic attack. So if I was in that place, I would have just been saying to myself, like, I just can't do that. I'm just not a natural riffer. I just can't do it. And you kind of limit yourself until you know, I built the skill of being able to, like, remove those blocks and then be able to express it more. So I think, you know, just with everyone, like we have like natural avenues that we go down and then other avenues that if we want to, we can develop. Like, you know, you have a desire to develop this other part of your brain, which is beautiful and amazing. But I think, you know, the fact that you have been expressing yourself in this one way, which, and I think there's something in this about like the right way to express, like this is what society says, like artists are this. Artists yeah. fit in this box and it's the creative and you've got to be looking at a canvas and splashing it, you know, your paint on it, like that's an artist. And then people say, well, I'm not creative.
Yeah, and it's that's like, so true. I think that's like especially prevalent in like the music industry, because a lot of people credit like musicians, the best are people that can just do it from their heart, and you know, do you know what I mean, that can just flow so easy. Like that's the people who are so admired usually as these incredible people, are people who improvise, they never play the same solo twice, you know, that's the kind of people that people generally look up to. So yeah. I think I always it's kind of ingrained into me that how I do it is wrong or something, and yeah. I'm just now managing to kind of be like, no, that makes my sound unique. That's kind of the breakthrough I've had this year, which has been like good, I guess. But
yeah, and I think yeah. you're just such an example for people that to show like creativity, even through this conversation, doesn't have to fit in a particular box. Creativity doesn't look like what most people think creativity looks like. Like even this conversation that we're having now is creativity. You know, and actually, I would argue that you're flowing right now in this conversation. Mm. You know, so actually, you are able to flow creatively through like a dialogue. And it's like, you know, I think, yeah, so sometimes it's like, yeah, sometimes, it's like squeezing yeah, blood from
my,
a rock.
Yeah, my brain just switches off. My brain is just like, oh, I'm done with this sentence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, wait, no, we're not done. We haven't finished. Actually. My brain's like, yeah, I'm done.
I know. And then I have to be like, Sophie. Yeah. Do you mind? And you're just like,
I'm like, oh yeah. Oh, I was talking. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay.
I'm working.
Yeah,
on
but
it.
I think. Yeah, I think it's fascinating, and I think it's just such a beautiful part of like how your brain works, and such a permission slip for other people to be able to express themselves in whatever way. Like, if you decide that music creativity for you is like, you know, singing into like a jug or something, can you find like a cool beat by doing that, cool, that's your thing, you know. And I think even like with the rise of TikTok, everyone's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of pushed people to be even more creative with their expression of things, where like people are really finding new ways of doing stuff. And I think hopefully over the next few decades we'll move away from like, oh, creativity looks like this, oh, academics looks like this, and it's like yeah. we can all just be all of it, yeah, you know, like why definitely. And we all have different ways of expressing it, so yeah, so interesting. Thank you for sharing on all of that.
Yeah, definitely.
I have a couple more questions just that came through about some of the things that have happened since you got into the media space. One of which being, you know, a rather public cancelling that happened with that was in relation to MGK. And I can just only speak from my perspective, where it actually, I don't know whether I've really even told you this, but it really rattled me personally. Mm-hmm. Like I found it very, very scary to witness you, my beloved sister, who you will have heard in the previous episode that we did together, I spoke about my ferocious rage of protecting Sophie against bullies.
Yeah.
But I still have that in me where I'm just like, I want to protect you. You know, I want to keep you safe. But also I really experienced this like massive fear that came up in me of like, I don't know whether I could handle that. Like, I don't know whether I could handle it for me. And I think it actually stopped me doing certain things visibility wise because I was scared of that happening. And so I'm really curious. Mm-hmm. Number one, could you maybe just explain what happened? And then number two, how did that affect you?
Yeah, so basically we'd just played, what did we just play? The Sports Illustrated party. And I was on the, just about to board my flight home when I saw a headline that was like, MGK cheats on Megan Fox with Sophie. I was like, sorry, what? I also have had a boyfriend for like 5-6 years too.
Yeah, yeah.
This is just as I'm about to take off. I'm literally in my plane seat. I'm like, I'm sorry.
And it's funny because if you know Sophie's, she's like the most innocent, like respectable, like this stuff just doesn't happen, you know?
No. I'm not one for the drama at all. I like my simple life with my cats. So I was like, yeah, this basically people that I think something had happened with, I don't even know what happened, but something happened with Coulson, between Coulson and Megan, and Megan had posted an Instagram post that insinuated that Coulson had cheated on her. And then someone commented saying maybe he got with Sophie. Someone commented that on Megan's Instagram, and Megan responded, maybe I got with Sophie, little flame emoji. And basically, yeah. I think like that was kind of her way.
We thought that that was actually going to be a good thing. We were like, oh, she's like joking into it, you know?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
This isn't like, going to be a big thing.
Exactly. And because like I know kind of her humor and like what she does, obviously I knew that she was doing that to try and squash the rumors, if you know what I mean. She was like trying to be cheeky with it, you know, like maybe I go with Sophie. So, you know, it was, anyway, it was then this headline came out and I was like, oh God, like people, obviously everyone's now assuming things because my name was mentioned and she responded to something with my name that, you know, that all the attention gets drawn to that and people come up with their own crazy stories and everyone kind of ran with this story of, the fact that he must have cheated and he must have cheated with me because I'm a female that's close to him.
And yeah. And then she deleted her Instagram. And so it was just this thing where it was like a line in the sand. Yeah. Yeah. Megan deleted her Instagram. And it was just this thing, this line in the sand of like, everyone was like, oh, Sophie has made Megan leave Instagram, you know, that kind of thing. And like all of Megan's like 17 million fans descended onto Sophie's Instagram page. Yeah. And the fun began for all of us, the whole family.
The whole fam was involved. So it was kind of crazy. Like obviously when I landed, like, you know, I'm obviously fortunate enough to have you know, my boyfriend Chris, who didn't even ask if anything was true. He knew like what's happened. He knew it's bullshit. So he was immediately like, you know, quite like, come here, and was like kind of very protective over me even in the airport. And I was like, why, what's happened? Because I hadn't really read anything at this point, but I was just like so anxious. I was like, because I hadn't, like, I'd been on a flight, I hadn't read anything, and Chris has been weird, and I'm like, okay, what's going on, trying to like hurry me to the car. And I'm like, why?
Oh no.
And yeah, then obviously I sort of started seeing everything come out, and it kind of just, it was sad. Like, it didn't necessarily, I think, like, I've got quite a thick skin when it, like, I was kind of used to, like, hate comments and stuff. And I got quite good at not, just not responding, not really reading things. Like, I don't read my comments that often. I don't delve into it. So I've developed quite a good way of just staying away from it. But that was definitely hard because obviously they were pushing a lot more. But I think what irritated me the most was just the insinuation that just because I was a female in this band that was newly in Cole's life, like it was literally just because I was a girl that was publicly seen near Cole, that it all must have been my fault. And it was this immediate blaming on the woman, blaming on this random girl that no one knows anything about, that, you know. And it just felt like a big step back for women in the industry. And I think that was the thing that I felt like it was a great thing. I was inspiring all these young girls. And then suddenly all these people that, these young girls that would have followed me thinking it was an inspiration, was suddenly hit with all of that. And I'm like, well, it just really just felt like a step back. Yeah. And it, you know, not for me, but for all women trying to break into the music industry and trying to, pardon me, trying to be a serious musician in a band. Yeah. You know, like I was there at the end of the day, I was there to do a job and I was doing my job. And that's all it was. And then this rumor got made up out of nowhere. So I think that's what kind of, that's what kind of irritated me. And it was just like, it was a whole crazy week. Like a journalist showed up at my parents' house, which was super crazy. We don't know how they got their address or anything. And it was just like, it was a lot. But as with drama,
wrote an article about all of us, found out that I'm in Australia, you know, all of this crazy, the level of stalking was high.
It was, it was crazy. And I think
it was a kind bit of scary.
It was funny because Mum and Chris were kind of low-key loving it. Like,
yeah, Mum's always been like, oh, I can't wait to be famous one day. And then Sophie's now like famous and she's like, oh, Oh, well, I guess it's me. Mom's this happened. A journalist shows up and mum's like, do you think they wanted to speak to me?
Well, do you know what they did? They came to interview mum and I was like, thank God I was there. Because if I wasn't there, mum probably would have been like, yes, come have a cup of tea. You know?
Oh, well, what's this about? You want to know what?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you.
Mum can't keep a secret anyway, so
yeah, exactly.
She would have been like, oh, well, I can't talk about it, but.
Yeah, it was funny because Chris loves the attention as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, so Chris got verified on Instagram because the Daily Mail wrote an article about him and he was so excited.
Hilarious.
You know, so him and mum were like, oh, look, my name's there. That's my picture. In the
Oh my God.
That was like, incredible.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that was so glad. My pain is your purpose.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, it was definitely a tough week. And after a few days, Megan actually did put up an Instagram post being, kind of dismissing the rumors and commented on one of my things saying, welcome to your first PR disaster, basically, was quick to squash the rumors and drama as quickly as it comes, it goes, you know. That's the thing is things are so fast paced in this world. Everyone's always looking to the next story and I get it. It was an interesting story. So it's fine. And at the end of the day, my follower count increased because of it. So, there's always some benefits to it, I guess. But
No PR,
it was a difficult time, but it is what it is.
No PR is bad PR. And I think, I'm really curious about how you actually handled the emotional side of it, because even just watching this, it was a lot. The comments were incredibly abusive, talking about your looks, what you looked like just assuming a lot of things about you and everything. How did you deal with the feelings that caused for you? Did you hide? Was it very upsetting? What happened for you emotionally?
Yeah, me and Chris went up to our parents for a little bit just to kind of get away. And I think I avoided looking at everything. I avoided kind of going on TikTok, and I didn't have Twitter anyway, thank God. But, mum was very good at telling me.
Good job, mum. Good job, mum. She just wants to be honest. No.
But I was quite good at kind of avoiding it generally. Sometimes videos would pop up and it sounds bad, but in a way I just tried to find the humor in it. And, sort of be able to laugh about it. And I was there were some videos where it was, I was getting into the drama myself. I was like, oh, maybe I did. With Chris, I was like, I did look at him.
Yeah, yeah. You did stand next to him, funny.
Exactly. And I was I was sort of just trying to find the humor in it, because I think that's something that gets me through, a lot of things is finding laughter and trying to find that kind of funny sides to it.
Yeah.
So, but I think also just having the support system around me, obviously I went up to my mum and dad just because I wanted, I want to cuddle my mum on the sofa.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need a cuddle from mum, and Chris was so supportive as well. Just having people around you that know the real you, that don't, not one person in my life questioned me. Yeah. Not one person in my life was like, is it true?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No one asked me that, because thankfully everyone knows who I am, and all my friends rallied around me, and it was nice. It was just nice to be surrounded by people who know who you are at your core.
Yeah.
And that's really beneficial in situations like that, is separating that whole online social life from your real life. And as I said, everyone's the center of their own story, and for them they might have seen that drama and then forgotten about it, commented something and then forgotten about it 2 seconds later. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember I had a conversation with Cole about it sort of when it came out, because obviously he's also gone through a lot of controversy. So there's, in a way, no one better to kind of mentor me.
Yeah.
And he was just remember, this too shall pass. Mm. And I think that really kind of stuck with me. And it's things go wrong. There's always things that happen, especially in the career that we're in. There's always stuff that comes up, and just knowing that things will pass, things will be okay. There's always a new drama to worry about. There's always something new.
Yeah.
So just thinking that it'll pass, just get through these weeks. Don't look online for these weeks. Go be with your family. Go away. Go do things by yourself. But it was difficult. Even going to town, I remember I'd wear hoodies to town, just in case. And it was probably a bit dramatic, to be honest. Probably
I don't know.
really.
I don't know.
It was a difficult week, but it passed. Yeah, you know?
Just like everything does.
Exactly. exactly. The next week, everyone was concerned about Team Selena or Team Hayley.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, true. Team Selena all the way. obviously, feminine authority there. Yes. But yeah, I just want to really acknowledge like the strength that you have, and I think it's really inspiring to hear someone that has faced such like public, you know, experiences, be able to talk about it in a grounded and neutral way, and hear how you moved through it as well, and even hearing, you know, through the grapevine, what Coulson's and other celebrities' opinions and mindsets are around it as well. Because I think, if I'm honest, this is probably an area that holds so many people back from like growing visibility and like putting their art, their creation, their podcast, their business out there, because they're worried of what's my mum going to think? What's my neighbor going to think? What's this going to think? And what if I get cancelled? And what if people don't like me? And what if it goes wrong? You know, and I think the part of this that is abundantly clear to me now is like, anyone that shines their light brightly will have more daggers thrown at them, you know, because you're brighter. And
yeah, definitely.
It's one of those things that I think we all kind of have to be able to lean into and accept and build that inner strength and inner authority is what I talk about. Yeah. So that then you can, you know, navigate those periods and know it's not personal. Because I think what is a dangerous, tricky slope is when people start to believe what people are saying about them when they don't know it. And that often happens when you believe something deep down about yourself, and then people, you feel definitely. Like it's being validated. But I think what's really cool with you is that you have a very strong inner strength around who you are, what you stand for, your integrity, your values. So it just didn't even need to shake you. So just like massive acknowledgement for that, because it's really cool to see. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Yeah, like I just to build off what you said, I do agree with you with the bigger you get, the more hate you get. And like that sort of, that's very prevalent in everything right now. And I kind of find the humor in it. Like, I think Chris got his first hate comment a couple of months ago. Incredible. On one of his drum covers. And we went out and celebrated that night. We went out for dinner and cheers to it, because we're like, Chris, you've made it now.
You're in the big league.
To be a professional drummer.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. It was like, you know, it was cool. It's just one of those things that comes with it. And I think you've just got to, it's like, I've heard a lot of people on social media say, you know, a lot of people don't read comments and stuff. And it's difficult because you get so many positive comments. But in a sense, you have to kind of not let yourself get carried away with all the positive comments as well. Not let your head get too big with the positive comments, because the more value you put on the positive comments, the more value you'll also equally put on the negative comments, if you know what I mean. So you've got to be able to do what you want that feels right to yourself. You don't want to pander to your audience because you think it'll get more comments. You've got to do what you think is right, because, you know, if you put so much value in what people are saying positive, you're also going to, the negative is also going to hold a lot of value as well, possibly even more value than the positives, because it's something that sticks with you. So it's like, you've kind of got to like keep doing what you're doing besides whatever any comments you're getting. You know, you've got to be happy with it yourself.
Yeah, I was actually on the way to this podcast, was listening to a podcast interview with Rick Rubin, who's a producer with on the Lewis House show, and he was talking about creativity actually, and he was saying like creativity and expression and like producing or whatever it is, you've got to do it for yourself. I don't do it for people. As soon as you start doing it for people, as soon as you do it for validation, it's not creativity, it's like a transactional thing. And so true art, whether you are a business owner creating reels or you are a musician creating music, you can't create it for validation, you've got to create it for you. And I think that's kind of what you're saying there, which is a really beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I want to finish up by going through some of the questions that we've got. We've actually got a lot of questions, and I'm going to have to filter through some of them from things that people want to hear from you. So one piece that I think could be relevant even to my audience as well, what is some advice you have to grow an audience using Instagram for musicians, but also for just anyone that's looking to grow online?
I'd say, again, like I said earlier, the first thing is just to start and actually make a video. And then also, what I do, like I do a lot of long form content on YouTube. And I think it's okay to like recycle that content, in a sense that like, if I film 1 5-minute video, I'll take, you know, that's also like 5 1-minute videos for Instagram vertically. So, you know, film landscape and vertical, like just make the most out of what out of what you've got there, and like you film it, you know, film it separately, like make it something new, but it can be the same, you know, the same piece or something. So it's just get as much content as you can out as often as you can, I think is important. And what I've found has really helped is having some sort of series on my channel. So I do Metal Mondays on Monday. And that's something that's helped grow my channel, because people know every Monday to come back and look at my channel, and there'll be a little Metal Mondays thing, you know, and everyone's like, yay, I love the Metal Mondays. And that's sort of, they always perform very well because people know to kind of return to your channel and that you're offering something there.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, I'd say that's sort of something to think about.
I love that. I love that. At what point did you feel, and have you felt, that's it, I've made it?
I think it's a difficult one, because I'm always sort of forward thinking. I'm always thinking what's next. And it's only sort of been recently, when we actually had our album party, that it was kind of the day after, where I was like looking back at the year and everything that's gone on, and I was like, wow, this is so like incredible to kind of see everything I've done and all these dreams I've achieved and everything. I think, I don't know, it was just like a really cool moment of reflection. But I don't think, I don't know if I'll ever be like, oh, I've made it, because that's kind of saying like, oh, I've done it all, you know? And I feel like with this like creative industries, there's always so much more to do, and there's so much more I'm excited about. There's so many more people I want to work with. So I don't think I'll ever feel like I've made it, and I don't really want to.
That's really cool. I love the way that you think about that, because it's kind of, again, keeping you grounded. And it feels like that growth mindset again, of like, we're not doing this to reach an end point. We're doing this to express. And I think that's what I'm hearing exactly, you say.
Yeah, exactly that.
I love that. Okay, a couple of silly ones here. If you were to star in a horror film, would you be a protagonist or antagonist, and why?
This is a really important question to me. because I think I'd love to say I was an antagonist. I feel like the cool answer is saying I'm an antagonist, you know, you're like the monster, and I feel like that's the cool answer. But really, I think I'd be a pathetic little, you know, or it is savior. A protagonist, the one that, I don't know.
Honestly? Yeah,
difficult words.
Yeah, English, yeah, yeah. I literally had written down here, wonder whether she'll know that word.
the bad, I'm going to say the bad, baddie or the goodie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd like to be the baddie, but I think I would be a goodie, because I'm very mild mannered. I'm not very good at being mean or putting people or anything. So I think my job would be going and protecting all collecting all the dogs and cats that people left at their homes when they fled, and protecting them.
Yeah.
That would be my job in a horror movie. And I'd probably so die too. Relatively quickly.
But I think you'd be dead pretty
my
fast.
My dog
too.
Empire would live on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, I'm not very, I'm just, I get,
you'll just be like, oh, don't
kill
me. Chris
follows me up the stairs. Yeah. Literally, yeah. Like, but I think like it might be cool, because maybe I feel like maybe they'd capture me, and then maybe I could turn evil. Like maybe they could convince me or something.
Wow.
I don't know.
Okay, easily influenced.
I could switch that.
Good to know.
I'm just thinking, it depends.
Okay, love it.
I'd like some sort of story arc. I can't just be the boring one that dies. I need a story arc.
Yeah, 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 100%. would Sophie rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
This is a really good question as well. Okay, wait. 100 duck-sized horses. Definitely 100
duck-sized horses.
Ducks. 100, that would be terrifying.
Yeah.
100 duck-sized horses, because ducks have these crazy teeth in their little beak.
Yeah.
They look crazy when they open their beak, and they're really violent.
Yeah.
So I would definitely, and I feel like horses, I don't know, I just feel like I could take anything the size of a duck.
Okay.
I could kick them. I have I could.
You've got limbs.
I don't know. I feel pretty confident. If I put my, believe it or not, I do have limbs.
You do have arms and legs.
I'll put my Doc Martens on. I'll train them, and they can be part of my duck army.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Perfect.
Joins the horror movie, and we take over.
Brilliant rationale.
The living duck.
And yes, last question is, what science subject would you have done if you'd quit music? You spoke about this in the guitar interview that you did.
Yes, I would have done forensic science. I actually got a scholarship to study forensic science at Sussex University.
Very cool.
Before I went to BIM, and then I went, nah, see ya.
I remember that whole decision-making process.
I know, yeah.
Dad was like, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, Dad was like, go to Harvard. And you were like, you know what? I'm going to play guitar.
I know, bless them. They were so supportive.
They were so supportive.
But yeah, I loved forensic psychology. Like sort of, I love, you know, blood splatter analysis, DNA analysis. I found really, really interesting. And just figuring out who done it,
yeah,
I think is really cool. So I definitely would have done something in that. And I still might do one day. I still think about potentially... starting that up.
Yeah, I love it. You'd be excellent at it. Okay, Sophie, well, that brings us to the end of this incredible interview. I'm sure there will be a part three when we meet up in person, which I'm so excited about, so that we can squeeze each other and give each other big long hugs and just walk into each other, because neither of us can walk in a straight line when we're around each other.
Very true.
But where can people find you? What things do you currently have out? Give us all your links. We'll obviously drop it all in the description below.
So you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, any of the social medias except X, Twitter. I'm Sophie Guitar on all of them, sometimes with an underscore, sometimes not, but just type in Sophie Guitar and you'll find it. I also have a new album out called Imposter Syndrome, which is all about my journey of overcoming imposter syndrome and performance anxiety, which is now available to stream everywhere. Anywhere you stream music, you can find that, and your physical copies are also available on shop.sophieguitar.com. So
beautiful.
Yeah, please check me out if you like it.
Amazing. We will link it all below. You are incredible and an inspiration to so many, and I wish we were doing this in person, but that will have to wait until next time. But thank you so much for chatting with me today, and I'm excited for round three already.
Me too. I love you.
I love you. Bye, guys.